Thank you, everyone. And thank you, Rosalie, for that great introduction. I love the video. I'm excited to talk to you today about active commuting to school among Latino communities in the state of California. And we approached this project because there's a general consensus that minority youth, particularly Latinos, walk and bike to school more often than other kids. However, actually, the published literature is very mixed, where some studies find this effect and others do not. So what we want to do today is present the results from California and discuss some of the methodological and conceptual issues that might be contributing to the inconsistencies. I have no financial disclosures to report. I'm very broke. But I would like to also take this moment to get in terminology. I prefer and use the term Latino, especially when discussing California population, but I'll be switching between Latino and Hispanic when referencing studies that do so. So this is my buffer slide. This is where I ad lib, because my understanding of active commuting to school has really evolved over time. First and foremost, this is a physical activity issue. And we'll see in the next slide, it's something that used to be very common, and now it's not. But above and beyond the immediate physical impacts of just hitting the sidewalk, there are broader benefits as well. There's psychosocial developmental benefits of autonomous travel, of not being chauffeured from place to place, of spending time with your friends and siblings, of exploring your community, and for making active transport a reasonable and viable alternative for other trips. So I really think that this is a broader issue, an indicator of a healthy neighborhood, but it's really contingent on the context of the commute. Because the reality is that a lot of the kids that are out there actively commuting are not doing so because this is the healthy choice. They're doing so because it's a matter of circumstance and some intersection of choice meeting circumstance. And so this is why we want to address these policies. More often than not, kids that are actively commuting are doing so in less than safe streets. And the major funder of active commuting to school is the Safe Routes to School program. And they have the dual goal of both increasing the active commuting to school rate, but also increasing the safety of the commute, which I think are both two independent and important goals. However, there's kind of an intrinsic tension between attracting new choice commuters and protecting the kids that are out there. So it's very important that we understand who is out there. Luckily, we have data for quite some time. The line to pay attention to is the solid gray line that starts off high. That's walking and biking to school. As you can see, in 1970, it used to be the dominant mode of transportation to school. In contrast, the second line from the bottom, the dashed line, is being driven, being chauffeured. And over time, we see the rate of active commuting really decline, with a near-mirror image of being chauffeured rising. The most recent national estimate is around 13%, whereas it used to be 40%. So in the here and now, who is actually out there? So these data come from the 2001 National Travel Survey, and these are simple age-adjusted rates. So it's not looking at other factors, but who, if you were to be out there on the streets with a clipboard, who would you run into? 10% of white kids were active commuters, 18% of non-Hispanic black kids were active commuters, and 31% of Latino kids were active commuters. And while these rates in of themselves are important because it's who is actually out there, they do not address some of the other relevant and contextual factors, such as distance to school, such as the minority youth are going to be in urban areas that are closer, have less access to a car. And relatively little research has really delved into school travel among minority youth, but those that do, one, find inconsistent results, and two, refer to this study, which was done by Noreen McDonald, which looks at national data, and she's really an authority of minority travel. And she found, after finding these age-adjusted differences, when controlling for some of the issues that someone asked about earlier, about socioeconomic status, about car access, about urbanicity, that these effects were no longer holding up. And it's a commonly cited paper, and so we kind of have mixed feelings. Do they or do they not actively commute more? There's three things that I want to bring up here. One is that the policy landscape and the funding landscape is not national. It comes from the states. State-level Safe Routes to School funding is awarded to localities and municipalities. So while national data is very important for benchmarking, from an implementation perspective, we need to be looking lower. We need to be looking at the states. The second is that there's broad differences in the rates of active commuting to school regionally. So that 13% figure that I mentioned earlier really masks a low of 3% to a high of 24% regionally. And the third, and I don't have a slide for this because I feel like I'm in good company, is that Hispanic ethnicity is a diverse and complicated construct. And summing everyone up in a single indicator variable has real chances of missing important differences within that subgroup. So that brings us to the case of California, which is a unique case. We have the highest or one of the highest rates of active commuting to school. We also have almost a third of the U.S. Hispanic population and the majority of the Latino population of Mexican origin. So we have a robust walking to school culture. We also have a strong and unique Latino population, which makes our state a good place of looking at this intersection between Latino ethnicity and walking to school. So I'd like to address three research questions. One, in well-adjusted models, getting at the previous comment, do we still see this effect of a propensity of walking to school among Latinos compared to other kids? Two, is there heterogeneity? Are there differences within this population that might be contributing to some of the inconsistencies that we've found in the literature? And then three, to answer calls of looking not only at the geographic and physical aspects of a neighborhood, such as distance and street connectivity, but looking at the social and cultural aspects, we're looking at the impact of living in a residential ethnic enclave on this behavior. For this analysis, we're using the 2007 cycle of the California Health Interview Survey, or CHIS. CHIS is the largest state health survey in the country. It's state representative, administered by phone. It's particularly well suited for research on minority populations due to its sampling and the types of questions that it asks. Neighborhood data come from the 2010 census, and the way we're modeling this is looking at any versus no walking to school in the past week. So these are logistic regressions, yes versus no. We're limiting our sample to elementary school age kids, 5 to 11, living in non-rural areas that live with 5 miles within school. When we are parsing out differences within the Latino community, we're going to be looking at parental acculturation, and I'll get into that later. And we classified ethnic enclaves as census tracts with at least 50% of Hispanic population. So this is for our first aim. And we have data on the trip to school and from school, and these are adjusted odds ratios. So for the state of California, for all race ethnicities, controlling for the common culprits, age, gender, poverty, socioeconomic status, access to a car, which is obviously huge, population density, maternal employment, we still see that compared to non-Latino white youth, Latino youth are 34% more likely to have actively commuted in the past week. Unfortunately, we do not see this effect from the from-school commute. The from-school commute is actually much higher, and it's just a lot of kids were coming out on that commute. But now that we've established the role of Latino ethnicity, we wanted to get into that unpacking of differences. And so we're looking at parental acculturation. Parents, because they're likely the person that's making the actual decision as to how their kid gets to school. And acculturation for a couple of reasons. One, it's a common way of slicing and dicing, for better or for worse. But also we know that active transport among adults is negatively associated with acculturation, so that the more acculturated you are, the less likely you are to walk or bike for non-leisure trips. And it's possible that these behaviors might be transmitted to their kids. Also, according to the most recent Mexican National Health Survey, roughly 70% of kids actively commute to school, which might get at some issues of cultural normalcy, what's acceptable as a means of getting to school. So what we did here was we run the same analyses, the same controls, urbanicity, access to a car. But instead, we focused just on Latinos and just Latinos of Mexican origin. So we really focused our population, and we're comparing low versus high acculturated individuals. And if there were no differences in this population, what we would expect to see is that all those blue lines would line up right on that red line, right? But what we're seeing is significant and sometimes strong but meaningful differences within this population. For example, compared to kids, compared to those who took the Spanish in English, who opted to do English, those who opted to do in Spanish had kids that were twice as likely to actively commute to school in the past week. Same thing with languages at home. Compared to exclusively English-speaking households, exclusively Spanish-speaking households were roughly twice as likely to actively commute in the past week. We see some effects with years of residency, not so much with immigration status, and even English skill, which is technically not statistically significant. You can see a great movement. It's marginal. And from a conceptual and methodological perspective, what it's telling me is that there's a lot of differences here that were not being accounted for in previous research. We're also seeing very similar effects for the commute from school. So now that we've established that ethnicity matters and that acculturation matters, we want to see how these two components play out within a geographic context and seeing the role of living in an ethnic enclave. So this time we reran the analyses again. There were a lot of analyses going on. Same analyses. But this time we're using a variable that incorporates white race, Latino ethnicity, and the level of acculturation that they were in. So we're running those models and we're interacting living in an ethnic enclave with those parent level acculturation and ethnic indicators. And we're exploring differences in the likelihood of active commuting. So for the sake of time, I don't know how I'm doing, but we're just going to focus on the language domains of acculturation. And you have the to-school commute on the left, from-school commute on the right. And on the left side of each graph, you see people living in a non-enclave. And so for both the to and from school, it doesn't look like there's a whole lot of difference. If you're living in a non-enclave, whites, Latinos, of whatever acculturation level, are commuting roughly the same. However, you do see trends when you consider the role of the enclave. In the two-school commute, you see that the less acculturated Latinos are going higher. You see the more acculturated kind of staying where they are, and you see white kids actually dropping a little bit. And while this is not statistically significant, it is a trend. And in the commute from school, we do see that this becomes statistically significant. And not in the way that I personally anticipated. I thought Latinos were going to go off the charts, and I thought that less acculturated Latinos were going to go even further off the charts. But instead, the significant difference is happening because whites are dropping down. So it kind of gets at this issue of safety and choice and really understanding the role of place. These results were consistent for language of interview and languages spoken at home as well. So in summary, when addressing the California context, we do see that Latinos are more likely to walk to school compared to non-Latino white kids, controlling for a lot of the issues that we are concerned about. And within that sample, we see meaningful heterogeneity, meaningful differences in their likelihood to walk that suggest that when we don't account for these things, we could be having mixed findings. And third, we see that living in a residential ethnic enclave does have an effect, particularly in the commute from school. And this is my swan song, because I love the policy aspect of this. And this is how I've evolved in this project, is understanding the context of which this commuting is happening. California youth of Latino ethnicity are at the highest risk for pedestrian injury. And schools in California that serve predominantly Latino populations are in more dangerous areas with higher traffic roads. We're having similar findings in other high Latino areas such as Texas. So this is not a question of just a great health behavior, something that we're promoting and should be celebrating, but it's also something that we have to be very cognizant of and diligent to make sure that we're protecting the kids that are out there. Safe Routes to School is the biggest player in the game. And they do great work. They're effective at both their aims of increasing the rates of active commuting and increasing the safety of the commute. However, the application process is notoriously difficult, and I know in California people hire consultants, affluent areas hire consultants to help with this process. We have to be making sure that we're protecting the youth that are out there, encouraging this behavior, and celebrating their accomplishments. an acculturation scale. That's a great, so I don't know if everyone heard, the question was about the decision to use an acculturation scale as opposed to those proxies. It's a great question. Acculturation scales can be very messy. They can be efficient. So, running the model 100 different times kind of got a little tedious, but I think it was interesting to see the different components of what goes into an acculturation scale. And I wouldn't want to use something that hasn't already been validated, and I didn't have that opportunity. We could have worked at creating our own scale, but I really felt like that might be steering a little left to the main point of this project. Do you have concerns about... Oh, is that right? Did I get it right? How did I do?
Yeah, that's
okay.
So the second thing is, why is language, I mean, you use language, I use language too, but why is, like, how did you define the language enclaves and the enclaves about? Was it, like, language isolation?
No, I'm sorry, that's a great point. Defining an enclave is also very difficult. All enclaves were classified as being 50% Latino, according to census. So just living there, right? So not a question. And actually, I missed this point. It's Latinos of Mexican origin. I was a little more specific with my enclave definition because that's the population I was focused on. So it's not issues of language isolation. And I think that that's a great point, especially in looking at the different domains. It's another one of those three big questions and just trying to be somewhat consistent, but it's something I'd like to talk about after. Thanks.
Did you find you didn't talk about it, but you might have looked at it, the kind of optimal distance for children to say, yeah, I want to walk to school? You looked at, what, 5 mile radius?
5 mile radius. Another,
that
is a long walk. Sunny California, though, so it's okay. That's a great point. In this study, we did not look at an optimal range. Other studies have. I think that's very, again, regional. You know, I think a 5 minute, I moved here from Boston, or I moved to LA from Boston. 5 miles is very different in January in Boston than it is in Los Angeles. I think that 5 miles afforded us enough of a sample size that we weren't really limiting, because this is a statewide survey. So just by chance, you're not going to have kids that live in that smaller catchment area, so we wanted to have enough sort of the sample size that would allow us some robust estimates. But we're controlling for distance at the 10th mile increments, so that issue that you're getting at in terms of the 5 miles is a very long walk, we're kind of getting at with the distance control. But no, we haven't. But that would actually be interesting, rerunning those analyses along with the x-axis kind of being distance and seeing how the role of acculturation or enclave kind of moderates, you know, along those effects. They could be walking farther, possibly.
Okay, great.